Our next speaker will be Song Lee from the Division of Society and Urban Environment. She'll be talking about the impact of third-party certification on farm labor, especially with regards to pineapple and cassava production in Costa Rica.
Thank you all for coming. I think that my talk will follow up Graham's talk pretty nicely. I don't know about Sarah's, because the Division of Society and Environment, it would be a stretch. So my talk is concerning third-party certification and pineapple production in Costa Rica. Nearly everyone in this room makes a conscious decision about the food you choose to buy at the grocery store, whether it's fair trade bananas or pesticide-free strawberries from Salinas. So choosing where our food comes from and how it's produced is an increasing concern and a political decision for many of us here in this room. I'm going to use my designated 12 minutes to tell a story about third-party certification, its impacts on producers and farm workers in Costa Rica's export agriculture sector. So this research presented here is a small part of a 14-month study that I conducted in Costa Rica and Nicaragua on international migration. This portion of the research is based on interviews with Costa Rican pineapple producers, Nicaraguan migrants working in the pineapple industry, managers working on large pineapple farms, and 3 months of participant observation where I worked on a large pineapple farm. So first, a little bit of background. There's been a shift in agricultural production in the global south due to a broader process of globalization or market-oriented economic development. From the numerous anti-globalization demonstrations calling for a more just trade, especially in agriculture, gives us a glimpse of the importance of exports in food production in the global south. So this expansion of new crops are called non-traditional agricultural exports. So in Costa Rica, where the study takes place, there's been a significant expansion of non-traditional agricultural exports, such as melon, ornamental plants, pineapples, and yuca. So this table shows the growth of pineapple exports in millions of dollars over time. And since 2001, pineapple production has more than doubled as compared to the other non-traditional agricultural exports, such as melon and ornamental plants and yuca. So more specifically, this case study takes place in the northern province of Alajuela. And within the past 5 years, the community and the surrounding area has shifted from a cattle ranching area to one of the largest pineapple producing areas in the country. So the sandy loam soils coupled with year-round rain makes this area one of the largest and the best pineapple growing regions in the world. So you can see this is, all of this here in the foreground is pineapple, and then in the back is a 600 hectare pineapple farm which abuts a 1600 hectare farm which also abuts a 1200 hectare pineapple farm, so it's immense amounts of land. And so Costa Rica is now one of the biggest producers of this special variety of pineapple called Golden, or ND2, and half of the fruit gets exported to the EU, and then the other half gets exported to the United States. And so this is the variety of pineapple that you see at the Berkeley Bowl that are very sweet, low acidity. And so many of the fresh crops exported to the EU have to be certified by the Europe GAP, which stands for the Euro Retailers Produce Working Group's Good Agricultural Practices, long name. So Europe GAP is a private certification company that provides guidelines for good agricultural practices from seed to post-harvest. And although the United States doesn't have a certification process in place, it only has the bioterrorism law since... So it's only concerned with inputs rather than a production process. And so, but because it goes to both of these markets, that all pineapples basically have to be certified by the Europe GAP. And so in order to become certified, the farm and the post and the post-harvesting processing, which is like after you harvest, what happens to the crop, need to meet over 220 points to have access to 24 distributors that supply the large supermarkets in the EU. And these requirements include production standards, environmental protection, labor rights, and sanitation. So it's a multifaceted certification process that controls all points of food production. So Europe Gap is an example of the growing private and neoliberal forms of certification that assures the consumer that the product that they purchase was produced in a certain way. So in short, this form of market-driven certification attempts to correct the negative consequences of neoliberal or market-driven policies that have resulted in these problems, like large, expansive plantation-like farms that use extensive agrochemicals and demand low wage as well as irregular labor. So we need to question why we think that we can purchase just forms of production or even human rights. And so Audre Lorde, Audre Lorde's famous quote sums up this contradiction, that the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. So given the context and the conditions, what are the impacts on the producers? So even though the Europe Gap tried to be sensitive to the needs of the small farmers, it is slowly pushing the small farmers out because the cost of certification is so steep and the requirements are so difficult to meet. And so part of this has to do with the nature of pineapple production itself, that 1 hectare of this special variety of pineapple costs approximately $16,000 to produce. And in Costa Rica, where the per capita income per year is $4,700, makes this a very high-risk commodity. And the golden pineapple is also susceptible to crop damage from too much rain or too much sun, and also disease. And this is also compounded by the fluctuating demands and prices that make it especially risky for this long-term crop. And so since scale is an important factor, the production cost in reducing the production costs, the smaller farms are being outcompeted. And so you can see here, this is a smaller farm with about 0.5 hectare of pineapple, and then the other tree-like species is yucca. So in addition, the farmers risk the chance of losing their certification since most small farmers rely on undocumented labor, which is not allowed by the Europe Gap. So even though the pineapple is a year-round crop, like all crops, it has labor demand spikes during the harvesting and planting. So larger farms are also increasingly challenged by the certification requirements, and it's not just small farms. And this has led to the changes in the structure of farm work to compensate for the increased costs. And so the work structure and dynamics of migrant workers have shifted into more flexible forms of labor where the work hours are undetermined even at the beginning of the day, and also through piece rate wages where workers get paid by the piece, and so rather than hourly wages. So there's no overtime or holiday pay for long hours. And so this is the norm for pineapple work, and so that the workers end up absorbing the challenges that are associated with certification. So in addition, there's a rise of the use of subcontractors who are on these large pineapple farms, who hire mostly undocumented migrants, skimming off their wages in the most labor-intensive jobs on these large farms. So in my research, findings show that certification requirements are slowly pushing the small and the most marginalized farmers out of the market, but it's also creating a sharp divide between the undocumented and documented workers who are working in the labor market, especially in pineapple. And then there's also an increase of use of subcontractors. And so I'm not arguing against third-party certification, because I too buy fair trade bananas and pesticide-free strawberries, and from producers, I'm sure, in terms of like fair trade bananas, I think that a lot of this farmers don't know that they're even selling to a fair trade market. And so first, state policies need to exist to allow for participation with less exploitation in the workplace. So in the case of Costa Rica, it's nearly impossible for a Nicaraguan migrant to get legal documentation to work in Costa Rica. But at the same time, the demand for Nicaraguan labor grows every day, and it's not just in agriculture, it's also in construction and private security. And so on the other hand, internationalization of certification in the case of Europe Gap that attempts to harmonize the production needs to consider the real capacity of producers in the global south and the potential of exclusionary requirements that often seem like givens to us here in the privileged global north. There's also been critiques of the lack of social and labor practice standards in much of the certification schemes, such as like the USDA's like New Organic. And I also agree that labor standards need to be included, but this research highlights the challenges and contradictions of using privatized and market-driven forms of labor regulations in tropical and off-season fruit exports from the global south. So these noble or moral commodities that are changing the, are changing production patterns and work dynamics of those in the global south in unintended ways. And I think that it's important to make the connection between our neoliberal consumption decisions, whether it's buying Gap Red or fair trade coffee, that we can't rely on the market to purchase justice, since these neoliberal forms of regulation create pressures that need to be released. And in the case of the pineapple industry, the small farmers and migrant farm workers are the ones who are absorbing it. And so I'm going to end with a quote from one farmer, and he says, "I've worked hard all my life to own this little piece of land so that I don't have to work for anyone else. And now with Europe Gap, there's someone always on my back telling me what to do. Plant here, spray there. I don't even feel like a farmer. I feel like a farm worker, but with all the risk. I had to put up my house to build this shed, but I don't have a choice. I have to move forward or else I'll be left behind." So thank you.
Questions.
All right, three questions.
So I saw the Europe Gap process being done in Paris, Argentina, and the growers were involuntarily making big changes that look pretty positive for the farm workers. What would you recommend for the how you would change Europe Gap to address the small farmer issue, if in fact there are some good things coming too?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that there are some good things that are coming too with the Europe Gap in terms of environmental protection. But in the case of Costa Rica, where I don't know if this is the case in Argentina, but in the case of Costa Rica, where the majority of the farm work is done by Nicaraguan migrant laborers, many of whom are undocumented, the Europe Gap needs to take into consideration that their policies are actually like separating the workers who actually have access and then the workers who don't, in terms of like within the document, within the migrant population. And so it has to be like on a case-based scenario rather than this like harmonization, you know? And so I don't know if in Argentina there's like a lot of like Chilean or Bolivian, you know, migrant laborers who are working in the agricultural sector. But I could probably say that in Chile and in Venezuela, there's probably a decent amount of migrant laborers, as well as in South Africa or Thailand. So it is a tough question. I mean, it's kind of this give and take.
Well, the distinction between migrant and non-migrant workers is because of their legal status, or is it because it's more likely that undocumented workers will not work in farms that meet labor standards?
And so when I say migrant workers, I mean foreign-born. So all of them are the most, I bet in about 90% of the pineapple work that's performed in the area is done by migrant workers, and they're Nicaraguan, foreign-born. But then in the pineapple plantations, there's a division between the documented migrant workers and then the undocumented migrant workers. And the people who are documented have been documented through a process of amnesty. And then there are, like, there are legal ways to actually get documentation, but it's so costly and bureaucratically difficult that it just doesn't happen. Yeah. Was there somebody in the back? I didn't want to. Okay.
I don't know how to phrase this as a question, but it's interesting how this, in my mind, parallels the Mexican border issue in the U.S. currently and in the past forever, and how this is the same situation that's happening, like you said, all over South America, all kinds of different migrant worker situations, and a lot of it is racist. When I was in Costa Rica, I mean, just the way they talk about Nicaraguans, so that's also part of it, just like here with our border issue, and so to me, it's so governmental and then also societal, that it's not just about the European, you know, Union standards, it's also about how they always had within their society this thing where they depend on, you know, other migrant labor, but then they also belittle that in their country. And so that's the hard part. How do you address, you know, not letting that country make it policy to kind of be racist or whatever you want to call it?
And so I guess I'm not saying that, like, I'm not making a position that Europe Gap is bad.
No,
that Europe Gap has led to these, you know, but I'm just saying that Europe Gap has created these different pressures And so, but then it's in the name of social and like environmental justice, which is a problem, you know? And so then that's kind of like, that's where...
But once it becomes policy and more ingrained, it's harder. That's why it's good to address this now.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's harder and harder to, you know, incorporate migrants into the work structure, it seems like.
But then I think that's what I'm saying is that it's not really ingrained in the policy, that it sees private certification that's outside of government. And so it's these certification requirements and methods that are actually like shaping labor dynamics and also the labor market. And it's not necessarily the state. Like the state has very little to do with that.
So then
I'm calling for more state intervention. Yeah.
Thank you very much.